Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 3, the whole chapter, verses 1 to 20. Vishabde's appearance in the womb of Mary Devi, wife of King Nabi. Text number 1. Sri Shuka Vacha Nabir Patikama Prajaya Mary Devya Bhagavantam Yakti Purisham Avahitatma Yatata. Translation. Shukadeva Goswami continued to speak. Maharaj Nabi, the son of Agnitra, wished to have sons, and therefore he attentively began to offer prayers and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, master and enjoyer of all sacrifices. Maharaj Nabi's wife, Mary Devi, who had not given birth to any children at that time, also worshipped Lord Vishnu along with her husband. So, first question is, what did you hear yesterday? Did he finish chapter 2?
Yes.
He finished, very good. So, I always have to know these things before I start. And so, what struck you about his class? What do you remember that struck you? Anybody? Yes?
That the most important thing is to cultivate a deep desire. That will be the basis for our life.
Deep desire
for serving Krishna.
For serving Krishna, okay. That's good. Deep. Make sure we get that deep desire right. Okay, yes, Maharaj.
I learned that what I learned from the discussion is that one has to be very careful what one desires.
One has to be very careful what one desires.
Because if you're sincere about it, you'll get your desire, but that doesn't necessarily mean you'll be happy with it.
Okay, if you're sincere, you'll get your desire, but that doesn't necessarily mean you'll be happy with it, especially here in Vrindavan, all desires are fulfilled. Every tree is a desire tree. The air can fulfill your desire. So any little deviant desire you have, you'll get it. Nishingdevi. If you meditate upon sense gratification, you'll go to the planets of sense gratification. Okay? Pichilok, yes. That's one of them. It's one of the planets to enjoy. Sankirtan. Yes. Actually, not Jambudweep, it was Bhumandala, the seven islands of Bhumandala, as far as I understand. And the sons of Agnitra, he'll divide up Jambudweep, because Agnitra is in charge of Jambudweep. Agnitra's sons. Oh, is that what you said? Oh, sorry. Okay, I misunderstood you. I thought you meant Priyavrata's sons. Priyavrata's sons.
Nine
sons, right. And he divided up Jambudweep with those nine. And the seven sons of Priyavrata, they got the Jambudweep, all the islands, and the oceans were divided up. Yeah. Yeah, right. So his Priyavrata's seven sons, they got those seven islands. And Agnitra got Jambudweep, and then he got nine sons. And he divided it.
Nine
varshas. It's quite interesting. I was just reading ahead on the 20th chapter, and it describes the seven islands. And each of the seven, six of the seven islands, they had, five of the seven islands, already Jambudweep's divided up, but the other five had seven divisions. And each time they had seven sons. Exactly how many sons, exactly how many divisions? And then the last island, there were two divisions, he had two sons. So I thought that was interesting. Jambudweep has nine, Agnitra had nine sons. 977772. Pushkar Dweep has two, it's divided by Manasotara Mountain. Yes, Prabhu?
For me, what's keep.
He kept the material desire. That's right. So. His conclusion, it's quite dangerous to fall down without experience a higher taste. And it's quite also dangerous to be a devotee without having a higher taste, too. It may cause you to fall down. Right, you have nothing. Yes, if you have not tasted Krishna consciousness, what will you come back to? But actually what I notice is when we first join, Krishna gives us everybody a taste. So then we all have to come back. He doesn't let us go. Okay, one? Yes? And Lord Brahma also wants a lot of children in the universe because that's his service to populate the universe. And, okay, Vanamali, I think...
Match your desire with the different character of Bhagavatam.
What's that?
Match your desire. So like whatever we desire, after we read, we can match.
Can match our desire. If you want to be like Agnidra, okay. If you want to be like Priyavrat, then...
And understand the position and...
Whatever you're looking for. But then you see what happens if you want to be like Agnidra. And what happens if you want to be like Priyavrat. Then you get the... Actually, what happens. And only in Bhagavatam do you get the real truth. In the other Puranas, you know, sometimes they live happily ever after and so many things. But not in Bhagavat Purana. You get the real... truth. We'll hear about the forest of material enjoyment soon. Okay, last one, the Shingadevi. Okay, we have to obey the orders of Lord Brahma. One thing I got from yesterday's verses just in my study was just these Sanskrit words kind of fascinated me. In the purport of the seventh verse of yesterday's, second chapter, the Prabhupada was comparing karmis with devotees, brahmanas. And this is like in the purport of verse 7, paragraph 2 or 3. Prabhupada says, karmis who act very seriously for sense gratification are always referred to in the shastras by such terms as pramata, vimukha, and vimudha. So pramata, they're mad, they're vimukha, their face is turned away, and they're vimudha, they're fools. And then Prabhupada says, the devotees... one who is apramata, sane, sober, dhira, knows very well a human being's primary duty is to render service to the Supreme Person. So that was my favorite out of yesterday's class. So today we're going to hear, now we've come down a few generations. We started with Priyavrat, and then Priyavrat had his son Agnidra, and now it's the grandson of Priyavrat, King Nabi, who we're going to hear about today. And Nabi is very, very special because he will have the Lord himself, Rishabhdev, will appear as his son. So today we're going to hear, if you want to have the Lord as your son, what you have to do to get the Lord as your son. So verse 1, we heard about this, how he was worshipping Lord Vishnu along with his wife. And verse 2... we're going now. Okay, you can flip the flip chart wherever's close over there, and we can see the seven things that you need when you're performing sacrifice to obtain the mercy of the Lord. This is verse 2. In the performance of a sacrifice, there are seven transcendental means to obtain the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Number 1, by sacrificing valuable things or eatables. Number 2, by acting in terms of place. Number 3, by acting in terms of time. Number 4, by offering hymns. Number 5, by going through the priest. Number 6, by offering gifts to the priests. Number 7, by observing regulative principles. However, one cannot always obtain the Supreme Lord through this paraphernalia. Nonetheless, the Lord is affectionate to his devotee. Therefore, when Maharaj Nabi, who was a devotee, worshipped and offered prayers to the Lord with great faith and devotion, and with a pure and contaminated mind, superficially performing some yajna in the line of a pravargya, the kind Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to his affection for his devotees, appeared before King Nabi in his unconquerable and captivating form with four hands. In this way, to fulfill the desire of his devotee, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifested himself in his beautiful body before his devotee. This body pleases the mind and eyes of the devotee. So which one of these things actually made the Lord appear before Majnabi? Yes, Vanamala.
Nabi's prayer.
Nabi's prayer, right. It's not one of the first seven. It's not by observing regulative principles, not by giving gifts, going through the priest, mantras, time, place, or the valuables. It is Maharaj Nabi's internal mood of devotion that brought the Lord, that made him appear. So externally, there's the karmakanda, fruit of activities are going on, pravargyeshu. Internally, there's Nabi's devotion. Shadhaya, the verse says, Shadhaya, faith and devotion. Vishuddha bhavena, with a pure mind. And yajita, he worshipped Lord Vishnu. So this is actually what attracted the Lord to come, not the sacrifices. So this is very important. People may criticize King Nabi, they say, why is he doing this Karmakanda sacrifice? And sometimes devotees, they also, people would criticize Prabhupada, why are you performing these marriage ceremonies? We heard yesterday. Why are you doing this Karmakanda marriage ceremonies for grihasthas? But actually, it is not the external that we have to see. We have to see the reason, the purpose behind it. And that's the whole Bhagavad Gita. The devotee may be acting, and someone else may be acting. And it may look the same, what they're doing. But actually, it's quite different. Just like our friend here, she's going for her PhD in Hindu South Indian studies. So she's going to be working as a chaplain in a hospital in Arizona, in all the hospitals. But to do that, she went to a Christian seminary to get her degree. Because without a degree, but in the Christian seminary, she did Vaishnava studies the whole way. She made her own stream. So someone may say, oh, what is she doing? She's in Maya. She went to this Christian seminary. But actually, she's for a higher purpose, to preach to a higher class of people. And so the devotee, he may do so many things. And people may misunderstand what the devotee is doing. Prabhupada did so many things. People misunderstood. But Prabhupada was very liberal. He was doing so many external things. But internally, his mood was to serve Krishna. So this purport, Prabhupada explains how the Lord appeared. I think this is near the beginning of the purport. Or maybe it's near the end. Oh, it's the end of the purport. One of my favorite verses from Brahma Samhita. Prabhupada says, Venam kanantam aravinda dalaya taksham marahavatam samasitam buddhasundarangam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, although blackish, is very, very beautiful. So here he came to reciprocate with the devotional service of Maharaj Nabi, and that's what Prabhupada says in the purport. What are some other examples of the Lord appearing to reciprocate the devotional service of the devotee? Yes?
In the arena of King
Prithus.
Prithus.
Yes, the Lord appeared there. He also came there to do some with Prahlad Maharaj. Actually, he had to do some mediation work in the King Prithu's arena there too. There was some problem. But yes.
Bhumi.
No, between Indra and Prithu, they had a little problem there. And so the Lord came to be the mediator, and it all ended up happily. They offered obeisances. So now we'll see how the Lord appears. Verse 3, Lord Vishnu appeared before King Nabi with four arms, very bright, the best of all personalities. Round the lower portion of his body he wore a yellow silken garment. On his chest was a mark of Shivatsa, which always displays beauty. He carried a kansha, lotus flower, disc, and club. And he wore a garland of forest flowers and Kaushtubha gem. He was beautifully decorated with a helmet, earrings, bangles, belt, pearl necklace, armlets, ankle bells, and other bodily ornaments bedecked with radiant jewels. Seeing the Lord present before them, King Nabi and his priests and associates felt just like poor people who have suddenly attained great riches. They received the Lord and respectfully bent their heads and offered him things in worship. End of the purport. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yam lava chaparam lava manyate nadikam tata. Upon gaining this, one thinks there is no greater gain. When one realizes God and sees the Lord face to face, one certainly thinks he has gained the best of all things. Vasopyasya param dishtva nivartate. One experiences a higher taste, his consciousness is fixed. After seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one ceases to be attracted by anything material and then remains steady in his worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Does anybody have that experience? You saw the deity and you lost your attraction for so many things. Or actually, we had that experience. We saw Prabhupada and then that was it. We lost our attraction. Or sometimes people, they go in the temple, they see the deity, I've never seen such a beautiful thing. And that's the beginning of their taste. Actually, I think it's in Kapiladev's teaching, Prabhupada said that the devotees, the first, there's first and second class and third class, but even the third class devotee, when they see the deity and they appreciate, then they're imperceptibly liberated. So this is our wonderful process. Verses 4 to 5. Priests began to offer prayers to the Lord, saying, "Oh, most worshipable one, we are simply your servants. Although you are fooling yourself, please, out of your causeless mercy, accept a little service from us, your eternal servants. We are not actually aware of your transcendental form, but we can simply offer our respectful obeisances again and again, as instructed by the Vedic literatures and authorized acharyas." So they didn't make up what they're supposed to do. When the Lord appeared, then they were following the scriptures according to the literate, according to Shastra and Sadhu, authorized acharyas. They were offering prayers. Materialistic living entities are very much attracted to the modes of material nature, and therefore they are never perfect. But you are above the jurisdiction of all material conceptions. Your name, form, and qualities are all transcendental, beyond the conception of experimental knowledge. Indeed, who can conceive of you? In the material world, we can perceive only material names and qualities. We have no other power than to offer our respectful obeisances and prayers unto you, the transcendental person. The chanting of your auspicious transcendental qualities will wipe out the sins of all mankind. That is a most auspicious activity for us, and we can thus partially understand your supernatural position. So, in this purport, there are two names which indicate the Lord is beyond the power of our senses to see or to know. And they happen to be, yes, Avan, oh, we found another one. Avan Manasagotra. I didn't see that one. Aprakrita, yes, Aprakrita. And? Adhoksaja. And I thought, just thought of another one too. What's another word? Aporusheya. Aporusheya. So many words. Any more words that show that the Lord is transcendental, beyond the power of our senses? Or any verses? You can give me a verse. Pantastukoti. Okay. Yes. Any other verses? There's a very famous one. Ata Shikishinamari Nabhave Brahmindya. Yes, the Lord is beyond, but we can see him. How? Sevan Mukehi Jivaro. By devotional service beginning with the tongue, the Lord reveals himself. So Prabhupada says here, Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to do with material perception. Even the impersonal Shankaracharya says, Narayana Paro Vyakta. Narayana, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is beyond the material conception. We cannot concoct the form and attributes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We must simply accept the description given in the Vedic literatures about the Lord's form and activities, stated in Brahma Samhita. Chintamani Pakarasa Miskapaviksha Laksha Vitishisulabi Abhipalintam Lakshmi Sahasya Shatasam Ramasevimanam Govindamati Purishantamaham Bhajami. So as we read this verse translation, you can understand, you can think, meditate, that actually the place that is being described here is right where we are right now. It's Vrindavan. And if you have the eyes, then you can see it. I worship Govinda, primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, yielding all desires, in abodes built with spiritual gems, surrounded by millions of purpose trees, always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis, or gopis, goddesses of fortune. So this is how Prabhupada says we can have some conception of the Absolute Truth, His form, His attributes, simply by reading descriptions given in Vedic literatures and authoritative statements given by exalted personalities like Brahma, Narada, Shukadeva, and others. Sri Rupa Goswami says, Ata Shikrishna Madhe Nabhavet Krayam Indiyai. Cannot conceive the name, form, and qualities of Sri Krishna through our material senses. Because of this, other names for the Lord are Adhoksaja and Aprakrita, which indicate He is beyond any material senses. So, in the last paragraph, I'm not going to read it. Let's see who read the purport. Prabhupada says there are two times there is no other way to understand the Lord. So there's two different no other ways. No other way to understand Krishna. So what's one of those no other ways? Hearing. Okay, that's, yes, devotional service. Engaged in devotional service, hearing. And what's the other one?
Bhakti.
Actually, you got both of them. Hari Purush got both of them. He's very smart. Hearing is part of devotional service. One of them is only by devotional service. And another thing Prabhupada says is we have to hear from the authorities and the shastras. Yes. I guess they're all the same thing. It's only one way. But you can think of it in two different ways, two different angles of perception.
Hearing and chanting.
Is that it? Sevanmukhi. Okay, it's hearing and chanting, to be exact, to be precise. Hearing and chanting is the only way, only way. Kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva. Gatiranyata. So what prayer? If we have the desire for the Lord to reveal himself to us, what prayer would you pray? Of the authorities or of the shastras, what prayer do you know that you would say to Krishna if you're very, very eager to have the Lord reveal himself to you? What would you pray? You know? You're thinking of something? What? Guru Sevananda. You forgot the beginning of it. Okay. Oh, I don't know that one. What's in English?
As a young boy is attracted by a young girl and a young girl by a young boy, let my mind be attracted to you in the same way.
Oh, that's, yes, that must be nectar of devotion, is it? What is that? Rupa Goswami. It sounds like. Oh, I see. Yeah, I never got the book when I was Pujari. The books came out later. We just did Govindamari Purisham. That's why I like it so much. Well, we didn't have to do any other mantras when we were doing puja. Just whole Brahma Samhita we would sing from beginning to end and while we were doing puja. That's how we were trained to be Pujari. Didn't know any other mantras. Just Brahma Samhita. Anyway, so yes. These are very beautiful prayers. It's nice to expand our knowledge of anybody else have a prayer that they would say to? Yes, Bhagavat. Jayadev Goswami?
Oh,
Jagannatha Swami. Nayana Patagami. Bhavatu me. Please appear before me. Jagannatha Swami. Right. Okay, I've got one here from Shukadev Goswami. When Shukadev was offering his prayers in the second canto, fourth chapter, verse 22, he was praying for empowerment. So another way of seeing the Lord is to get understanding of him in your heart. It's also hearing and seeing. And another way the Lord manifests himself is giving you knowledge. So this is the prayer of Shukadev. Pachotitayena purasarasati itam vatajasya satam smitim vidi salakshana pradurabhutkilasyata same vishinam shabha pasiratam. May the Lord, who in beginning of creation amplified potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, be pleased with me. So Prabhupada says that when you get inspired by the Lord, then this is an awakening of knowledge. It's a wake-up call. It's a wake-up call. One of my godbrothers, Bhaktisiddhanta, he was giving Bhagavatam class a few months ago before I went to Mayapur, and he said he had a dream of Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada came to him and he said, "It's time for you to wake up and be really engaged in devotionals." And then he said, "But Prabhupada, what does that mean? I'm doing service, I'm doing it." Prabhupada said, "Just wake up." And then he said it three times, "Wake up." So what does that mean? It means get serious about spiritual life. So this wake-up call may come in different ways. It may come from this Lord in the heart. It may come from your guru. It may come from some catastrophe that happens to you. That may be your wake-up call. And so we all get our wake-up calls when it's time to wake up, engage in devotional service. So there is one interesting thing I found in this purport of the verse 2.4.22. And Prabhupada says, no mundane scholar can translate or reveal the true import of the Vedic mantras. They cannot be understood unless one is inspired or initiated by the authorized spiritual master. This is very, very important. My ex-husband, Purna Pragyadas, he is now doing some summaries of the Puranas for Alok, Vasi Biharla. And he's, of course, he has the Krishna conscious perspective. So he reads some of these translations, and when he reads a verse that he knows from our literature, then he can see their mistakes and how they mistranslate things. There is one verse that appeared twice. One is from Mahabharata, and it's a very famous verse which Prabhupada quotes all the time. Tarko pratishta shutayo vibhina nasavisha yashamatam nabhinam tarmasya tatam nihitam guhaya. So when it comes to this part, tarmasya tatam nihitam guhaya. So what they, when they translate it, they say, well, of course we know the verse means that you cannot find the absolute truth by studying the Vedas, Shruti, by going to the different rishis, by argument. The truth is found in the heart of the pure devotee. So what do they translate? So this guha is translated as the heart, a very secret place. So how do they translate guha? Cave. The truth, the absolute truth is found in a cave. So how are you going to understand what that means? You're going to go start looking in all the caves. Huh? Yeah, right. If you get the right one, maybe. But of course, do you have the eyes to see Vyasadeva in this cave? You may find Vyasadeva's cave, but what will you find in Vyasadeva's cave? Anyway, so that's an example of how you really have to go to the proper authorized spiritual master to get the truth. So these Brahmins here, they're actually nice devotees, even though they're engaged in karmakanda sacrifice. And so they are here offering their prayers and they're glorifying the Lord. And later on, they're going to actually feel very ashamed for calling the Lord for such an insignificant purpose. So verse 6, O Supreme Lord, you are full in every respect. You are certainly very satisfied when your devotees offer you prayers with faltering voices and in ecstasy bring you tulsi leaves, water, twigs bearing new leaves, newly grown grass. This surely makes you satisfied. So Prabhupada, why are they saying this verse? Actually, because they did such an elaborate sacrifice. It's not simply, you know, little tulsi leaves and some flowers and newly grown grass. This is not what they've been doing. This is something else. They're saying, actually, you don't need all this huge sacrifice to satisfy you. You're satisfied if you just get a little tulsi leaf and some water and in devotion. Bhaktya mama bijanati, as Krishna says in Gita, and Prabhupada says in the purport, one does not need great wealth, education, or opulence to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one is fully absorbed in love and ecstasy, he need offer only a flower and a little water. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya priyachati. If one offers me with love and devotion a leaf, flower, fruit, or water, I will accept it. So Prabhupada quotes from Gautamiya Tantra, Hari Bhakti Vilas. Tulsidala matena jalasya chilakena va kinite samatmanam bhaktebhyo bhaktavatsala. Shri Krishna, who is very affectionate toward his devotee, sells himself to a devotee who offers merely a tulsi leaf and a palmful of water. Supreme Lord is causelessly merciful upon his devotee, so much so that even the poorest of men can offer him a little water and a flower in devotion and thus please him. This is due to his affectionate dealings with his devotees. So I think in Govardhan Leela, there's that place called Aniyor. Aniyor. So Krishna was sitting on top of Govardhan and he was asking for so much prasadam, and they were giving them hills and hills of puris and valleys of sweet rice and chapatis and sweets. And he ate all of them. And then he said, Aniyor, Aniyor, bring me more, bring me more. But there wasn't any more. So what did they do? Yes.
They gave him
a tulsi leaf. Yes. Huh? Lord Balaram did it?
Yeah, he brought it.
He brought it.
He brought a bunch of tulsi leaves and he gave tryptos me.
Tryptos me.
I'm satisfied.
Okay.
One thing.
Yes.
This, in the Sanskrit, is Durva Uttare. Durva is another name. In Garuda Purana for Kusha grass.
Kusha grass, okay.
So Kusha, it's not an ordinary grass.
Okay, not you can't just go get the grass out of the ground and think you can. Krishna's going to be happy with that. It's Durva.
The Durva has got, because the reason that Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are manifested in the roots, the stem, and the top, respectfully, of that particular grass.
Wonderful.
That's why when they make mats with it, they leave the roots, you know, sticking out.
Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are in the roots, middle, and top of Durva grass, which is Kusha grass. Okay.
But Krishna does, it's described in Shastra, that Krishna sometimes decorates himself with newly blossomed mango sprouts.
Mango sprouts.
Yeah, new leaves, you know, he decorates his hair sometimes.
Okay. So we have it here straight from Maharaj, that Krishna sometimes decorates himself with these newly sprouted leaves and grass. So he likes it. Actually, this example of... It doesn't require a lot of opulence to worship Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was in Bombay, and he was living in the house of Mr. Sethi. He's one of our best supporters in Bombay, Mr. Sethi. So the house was under construction when Prabhupada was living in it. Prabhupada was up on the top floor. And one day he was sitting at his table with, and some all these big men were with him, very rich men. And then one poor laborer walks in the door, just in a gumsha. And he brings in a bouquet of flowers, puts it on Prabhupada's desk, and then he offers obeisances and goes out. And Prabhupada was so touched by that gesture of devotion, even though it wasn't a lot of money, a lot of opulence, but he was very, very pleased. So Krishna is like that also, that we just do with devotion, then he's very, very happy. And this is the way that Advaita Acharya brought Lord Chaitanya down. He was offering tulsi and water, Ganga water, to Lord Krishna. And he brought the Lord down. So this is very, very powerful worship. Verse 7, we have engaged in your worship with many things and have offered sacrifices unto you, but we think there is no need for so many arrangements to please your lordship. So this is why they're talking about offering simple things. In the purport, Prabhupada says, Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī says, if one is offered varied foods but has no appetite, the offering has no value. In a big sacrificial ceremony, there may be many things accumulated to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if there is no devotion, attachment, or love for the Lord, the arrangement is useless. The Lord is complete in Himself, and He does not need anything from us. However, if we offer Him a little water, flour, and tulsi leaf, He will accept them. Bhakti, devotional service, is the main way to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is not a question of arranging huge sacrifices. The priests were regretful, thinking they were not on the path of devotional service, and their sacrifice was not pleasing to the Lord. So now Prabhupada is revealing what is the mood of the priests behind their offering these types of prayers. So then if this is true, then why did Srila Prabhupada engage all these Goswamis for the opening of Krishna Balaram temple, mantras, costly sacrifice, very expensive. Brahmins, yes.
Due to social convention.
Social convention. Yeah, I mean, if you don't need it, then why didn't he just do Harinama for a little tulsi and that's it? Because the people would not accept. They think, oh, sacrifice, something's going on here. There's a big sacrifice. People see the opulence, see the people. Everyone comes, yes, something's actually, but if you just do Harinam, they think, well, what, you know, it's just Hare Krishna, nothing's going on. But actually, Prabhupada said, the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, that was the real installation. And Mayapur also, there was so much going on, but Hare Krishna Mahamantra, is so I hear, was actually what the devotees felt as the installation. Of course, the bathing was also beautiful too. Verse 8. All of life's goals and opulences are directly, self-sufficiently, unceasingly, and unlimitedly increasing in you at every moment. Indeed, your unlimited enjoyment and blissful existence itself As far as we are concerned, O Lord, we are always after material enjoyment. You do not need all these sacrificial arrangements, but they are meant for us so we may be benedicted by your Lordship. All these sacrifices are performed for our fruitive results, and they are not actually needed by you. So Prabhupada in the purport explains how we are benefited by doing sacrifice to the Lord. He doesn't need it, of course. As here it says, he has everything, it's always increasing unlimitedly. Why do we have to give something more to him? Why go and give money to Krishna? He's the most opulent of everyone. Why should we? Yes.
So we can become free from bondage of work.
Freed from?
Bondage of work.
Bondage of work.
Yagyata kamaranyatra. If you offer the food or the result of a work to him, you become free from that bondage.
Right. So that's one of the reasons Prabhupada gave here in the purport. If we engage our money in constructing a gorgeous temple, we're freed from the reactions of our endeavors. Then there's another reason, and you have another reason? What's that? What did he say? I couldn't understand. Oh, Krishna is a higher enjoyer, and we are meant to please him. Thank you. Krishna is a higher enjoyer. Okay. Yes. Krishna likes to please us. Wow. So we're getting wonderful reasons that aren't even in the purport. Or maybe they are, because I haven't read it since a few days. Krishna is a higher enjoyer, and we're meant to please him. And one more reason.
And when Krishna is pleased, he gives us his benedictions.
Okay, we'll get benedictions from Krishna if Krishna is pleased. And at the end of the purport, you know what Prabhupada says? Another reason. Yes, actually, that's what you said. If we somehow or other receive blessings and benedictions from the Lord, our consciousness can be purified. We can become eligible to return home back to Godhead. So that's the benediction we want, to be eligible to go back to Godhead. Verse 9. Bhagavat Sandarbha. Which verse?
8.
Yes? This verse is in Bhagavat Sandarbha. All goals of life are situated within the form of the Supreme. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, verse 9. O Lord of Lords, we are completely ignorant of the execution of dharma, kama, and moksha, process of liberation, because we do not actually know the goal of life. You have appeared personally before us like a person soliciting worship, but actually you are present here just so we can see you. You have come out of your abundant and causeless mercy in order to serve our purpose, our interest, and give us the benefit of your personal glory called Upavarga, liberation. You have come, although you are not properly worshipped by us due to our ignorance. So they're understanding, they're feeling like they made a mistake, that actually he's there to liberate them. But what are they going to ask for? A son. For Maharaj Nabi. So depressing. Not depressing, because the Lord will come as his son. So it comes out all right. But in the purport, Prabhupada says that the Archivigraha, is the deity in the temple, is present for the same purpose. So isn't that nice? The Lord has appeared for us as the Archivigraha. And all we have to do is go and see him. He's right there. We don't have to wait to see the Lord. Out of his causeless mercy, Supreme Personality of Godhead presents himself before us so that we can see him. Since we have no transcendental vision, cannot see the spiritual Satchidananda Vigraha of the Lord, therefore out of his causeless mercy he comes in a form we can see. We can only see material things like stone and wood, and therefore he accepts the form of stone and wood, thus accepts our service in the temple. This is an exhibition of the Lord's causeless mercy. I often think, you know, the deities, they just stand there the whole day. It must be really tiring, and they must get hot. And that used to be a pujari, you know. Yeah. Actually, in some temples, they notice that the deities do sweat. Yeah, the pujaris, some pujaris told me that the deities were sweating in their temple. Yeah.
One pujari told after the Uchavamurti go up, outside with all the taxation.
Yeah.
When he come back, then he gets burdened because we did so much, like tying.
Oh yeah, they tie him up, and yeah, I know when in Mayapur when they do the swing festival, I don't go because I just get so worried that they're swinging so high. To me, it looks like they're just going to fall down. I can't watch it, you know. So I used to be a pujari, and I would really take good care. I wouldn't let them swing so high. But they're pretty wild in my opinion. Oh, yeah.
Loose.
Yeah, sometimes they don't feed them enough. And sometimes they feed too much and the clothes get tight. Yeah, he became fat, yeah. Very opulent in Bombay. They can feed a lot to Krishna, so he gets fat there, just like all the people who come to visit.
I didn't see Radharani for 3 months when I came back. I'm just looking to you, and you know, your face started to be a little bit more, she became a little bit more fat than 3 months before.
So we can see the deity in different ways. Maharaj, you have a very favorite verse from Kapila Dev about the deity. Remember that verse? That you wanted us to learn? Do you know that? Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was
325-36. 36, yeah.
On seeing my forms, then the devotee's heart and mind become completely stolen. And seeing my pastime winning smile.
Right.
And my... He said, the hearts and minds of my devotees become stolen. And in this way, they become absorbed in devotional service without desiring, even though they feel unqualified.
Unwilling.
Unwilling.
Yes.
They're unwilling means that basically out of shyness. They easily attain my abode.
Yeah. In spite of his unwillingness, he attains liberation without separate endeavor. Prabhupada says, in spite of his unwillingness, the devotee, he's unwilling. And we'll find out why he's unwilling in a few purports later on. There's actually a reason. We all want to go back to Godhead, but sometimes we don't want to disturb the Lord also by our presence. Yes. Maharaj, no. Okay. Now we need the generator again. So Prabhupada, he made some comments on deity worship that if you dress Krishna, then you'll be satisfied. And you'll forget how you dress yourself. Actually, that's the problem I have sometimes. I forget when my daughter tells me, you don't know how to put on a sari. Of course, now I have no excuse because I'm not doing deity worship before I had an excuse. But Prabhupada in one lecture in Bombay, again on 3rd canto, 25th chapter, he says that Krishna is very, very beautiful. But when a devotee serves him, then Krishna becomes more beautiful. And then the devotee becomes also beautiful. I know when I was doing deity worship in Calcutta, then every day I would be like Krishna face to face, like this close. I would look at his face and I would just see how he wanted it to be, how he was beautiful. I would see how beautiful he was and I would see all the flowers already there and I would just put them there, kind of how he wanted it to be. The earrings like this and the flowers like that and his hair like that. It was like he was doing it himself. He just wanted to be a certain way, and I was seeing how he wanted to be beautiful. And then I was just trying to do it as he wanted. And so when you're doing deity worship, then you get very close to the deity. And one time we used to take pictures, photographs of our deities in Calcutta. And it was very funny. Garga Muni was our president. He used to take those pictures out preaching to the life members. As soon as they would see the picture, he said they would become life members. Just to see the picture of the deity. So the deities were so beautiful that they had this effect. And we didn't have so much money, but we had a lot of flowers. So we would just put flowers everywhere, a dozen lotuses, a dozen roses every day. And I had one rich man, he was bringing 50 gallons a day. So I would change the deities 5 times a day. I would change the flowers. Haribol. So Srila Prabhupada, he really liked that. He liked when you... I think he's trying. No. I think Braj Bihari is trying. So anyway, this is This is the beauty of deity worship. Okay. Okay, so we'll go on. Verse 10. O most worshipful of all, you are the best of all benefactors, and your appearance at saintly King Nabi's sacrificial arena is meant for our benediction. Because you have been seen by us, you have bestowed upon us the most valuable benediction. So they're appreciating the rarity of darshan of the Lord. So at the end of paragraph 2 of the purport of verse 10, or somewhere in paragraph 2, there's something very nice, near the beginning of paragraph 2. The Supreme Personality of God is equal to everyone. In that sense, he has no enemies and no friends. Everyone is enjoying the fruit of reactions of his own work. The Lord in everyone's heart is observing, giving everyone desired result. However, just as devotees are always anxious to see the Lord satisfied in every way, similarly, the Supreme Lord is very anxious to present himself before his devotees. So we want to see him, and he wants us to see him. This is going on. So that's why he comes from Mangalarti every day. Krishna's coming to see us, and et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, where does he come? Maybe if nobody comes, he won't come either. Anyway, I also don't come, but I'd like to. I'd love to come. I just have the desire, but unfortunately, the body is not getting up early enough. Verse 11. Dear Lord, all the great sages who are thoughtful and saintly persons incessantly recount your spiritual qualities. These sages have already burned up all the unlimited dirty things and by the fire of knowledge strengthened their detachment from the material world. Thus they have attained your qualities and are self-satisfied. Yet even for those who feel spiritual bliss in chanting your attributes, your personal presence is very rare. So many people may be chanting, and many people may be doing devotional service, but they don't get the darshan. Few get to see the Lord face to face. Because we're always hoping for that. That's why we stay here. We're just waiting for that day. It may not come in this life. So then we'll have to take another birth. Purport. The priests in Maharaj Nabi's sacrificial arena appreciated personal presence of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. They considered themselves very much obliged. The Lord's appearance is rare even for great saintly persons who have become completely detached from this material world, whose hearts are clean due to constantly chanting glories of the Lord. Such people are satisfied by chanting the transcendental qualities of the Lord. The Lord's personal presence is not actually required. Priests are pointing out the Lord's personal presence is very rare, even for such elevated sages. But he was so kind to them that he was now personally present. Therefore, the priests were very much obliged. So, these priests are saying, those who are chanting, sometimes they get the darshan. But we're just Karmakandi priests. And you came for us. We don't deserve this. So how do we deserve this appearance of you? We're just, you know, some ordinary priests doing some ritual sacrifice and you came. So this is their mood. Verse 12, we don't deserve it. Is it?
It says, the devotees overcome any obstacle fate may place between them and the Lord.
Acha. The devotees overcome any obstacles that fate may place between them and the Lord. Okay, this is on verse 11.
Yeah. And 12 also is Bhakti Sandarbha.
Bhakti Sandarbha. Huh. Here's a verse on chanting. Remember what I said yesterday. You're always going to find a verse on chanting somewhere or other. Verse 12. Dear Lord, we may not be able to remember your name, form, and qualities due to stumbling, hunger, falling down, yawning, or being in a miserable disease condition at the time of death, when there is a high fever. We therefore pray unto you, O Lord, for you are very affectionate to your devotees. Please help us remember you and utter your holy names, attributes, and activities, which can dispel all the reactions of our sinful life. So Narayana Smriti, Prabhupada says, this is our success of life. But we may not be able to, even though we chant our whole lives, we may not be able to chant at the time of death. So what happens if you chant your whole life, but at the time of death you don't chant? What's going to happen to us? So I know one god sister, Pranada, she had an operation last March this March, this last March. And she had a tumor, which was taken out. And that operation, they successfully took out the tumor, but by mistake they cut the urethra. So urine was going up in her abdomen, and they didn't notice it for a couple of days. So she was dying, actually. And she was losing her senses one after the other. First she lost her sight, then she lost ability to touch, and then she thought, okay, at least I can think, I can do my Manasa Puja, but her mind could not focus. Her mind was also gone. Everything was gone except one sense.
Hearing,
yes. So her friend was there, she put on tapes of Prabhupada, and that's what happened. And then they did a second operation, and then she was okay. I think they did another operation. I think the second one they also wasn't successful. And they had to do a third one. And then she finally got out of the hospital. So this is, it could happen anytime. As I described last year, I had a near-death experience when I wasn't expecting it. So it could happen to us at any time. But the point is that we have to practice in this life. And if we don't remember Krishna, then Krishna will remember us, which was what happened to me. I was like, lost all my memory, and then the holy name came, and so Krishna came, actually. So this is the prayer in Ishopanishad, that please remember everything I've done. While you're still conscious, you pray to the Lord, please remember what I've done, because I may not remember you at the time of death. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, there's a very similar verse in 6th canto. We'll be hearing that in September 6-15. If one chants the holy name of Hari, then dies because of an accidental misfortune, falling from the top of a house, slipping and suffering broken bones while traveling on the road, bitten by a serpent, afflicted with pain and high fever, being injured by a weapon, one is immediately absolved from having to enter hellish life, even though he's sinful. So Prabhupada, he gave us a prayer to Super Soul so that we can to help us remember Krishna. And Prabhupada, he wrote this prayer in a letter to Devananda in Los Angeles, 1968. I read it last year, but it's worth repeating. This is Srila Prabhupada's prayer to Super Soul. My dear Krishna, please remind me to always chant your holy name. Please do not put me into forgetfulness. You are sitting within me, a super soul. You can put me into forgetfulness or into remembering you. So please, do not put me into forgetfulness. Please always remind me to chant. Even if you send me into hell, it doesn't matter. As long as I can always chant Hare Krishna. Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda are singing one very nice song, which they are requesting everyone to please chant Hare Krishna and come along with them. So that is our request to everyone. Anybody know the song of Lord Chaitanya? I know it, actually. I know the song. It's if I can. Radha Krishna Baba Hare Shabai. Okay, I can't remember the rest of it. Radha Krishna Bala Sange Chala E Matra Bhikkhu Chai. So they say, you just chant Radha Krishna and come along with us. And this is the only alms that we are begging. Radha Krishna Bala Sange Chala. Come along with us and chant Radha Krishna, and that's all we want from you. This is their only alms that they are begging. Just chant and come with us. So this is what Prabhupada is referring to here, this prayer. Verse 13. Dear Lord, here is the great King Nabi, whose ultimate goal in life is to have a son like you. That's his goal. Dear Lordship, his position is like that of a person approaching a very rich man and begging for a little grain. Maharaj Nabi is so desirous of having a son. He is worshipping you for a son. Although you can offer him any exalted position, elevation to heavenly planets, liberation, back to Godhead, and he just wants a son. Okay. So the priests are apologizing for the request of a son. Who else was apologizing in his prayers? In the third canto, somebody was feeling regretful. Kardama Muni says, you've come here and I'm just asking you for a wife who's like a cow of plenty. Anyway, Sometimes we have to do it. We have to ask the Lord for help. Yes.
Gajendra
also. Dhruva also. So many examples. So these are more like where we're at. We have some problems. We ask the Lord to help us. And He helps us. Sometimes in the way we want and sometimes in the way we don't want. But this is Krishna. So Prabhupada says, second half of this purport, that an intelligent devotee doesn't ask the Lord for anything material. His only prayer is, Mama Janmani Janmani Shre Bhavatan Bhaktirohe Tukite. He wants to be engaged perpetually in loving service of the Lord. He does not want promotion to heavenly planets or mukti, liberation. If this were the case, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not have said, Mama Janmani Janmani. Doesn't matter to a devotee whether or not he takes birth life after life, as long as he remains a devotee. Actually, eternal liberty means returning home back to Godhead. A devotee is never concerned about anything material. Although Nabi Maharaj wanted a son like Vishnu, wanting a son like God is also a form of sense gratification. A pure devotee wants only to engage in the Lord's loving service. So Prabhupada is giving a very high standard here. Very, very high standard. I mean, it's not so bad to get the Lord as your son or somebody like the Lord as your son. Even, I think Bhaktivinoda Thakur was wanting a wonderful son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, but Prabhupada is taking a real, very strong stance here. Pure devotional service. This is not pure devotional service. Verse 14.
Something was there about Atrimuni. Remember Atrimuni?
Oh, yeah.
He said he was not sure who was the Supreme.
Oh, he didn't know.
God,
yeah.
Therefore he said, all of you please become pleased with me and become my son.
Well, I think, they realized that he... Yeah, they all three came.
That was considered to be still a material desire. If you want Krishna as your son, it's all right.
Yeah.
Same thing with Sutapta and Krishna.
Sutapta and Krishna.
They became Vasudev and Devaki.
Vasudev and Devaki.
They inside were Sutapta and Krishna. For 60,000 years, they needed to have a son. Prabhupada says same thing. Better not to desire to have brother's son in this world, better to go back to brother and have him.
Right. So Prabhupada is not encouraging us to follow this example.
Tenth canto where?
It's
10th canto.
Is it don't
when it's probably the
better to desire to have his own
third chapter. Third chapter is Krishna's appearance and then the Lord speaks
first
to them.
Yes. To
Prabhuji.
I have a question.
Question. His question, if Vishnu hadn't come, would they have been satisfied with the yogya?
Was there goal to invite him or was just to perform yagya in order to get sun and then they would just wait for sun later?
Well, their goal was to invite him and both. Actually, they were asking Vishnu for the sun, but he could have done it another way. He didn't have to come, you know. But he came personally. Oh, you called me. I mean, he could have just sent a message or sent the sun or something like that, but he came personally.
In the case of Dasaratha, he didn't came personally.
Who?
In the case of Dasaratha.
Dasharatha.
He gave something.
He just gave. So there's different ways, and so they were appreciating the way in which he was answering their prayer, personally coming and appearing right before them. So this is wonderful. And so they're very much appreciative. 14. Dear Lord, unless one worships the lotus feet of great devotees, one will be conquered by the illusory energy and his intelligence will be bewildered. Indeed, who has not been carried away by the waves of material enjoyment, which are like poison? Your illusory energy is unconquerable. No one can see the path of this material energy or tell how it is working. So Prabhupada now, interestingly, at the end of, after this quote of Daivihesh Gunamayi, the second paragraph, Prabhupada now starts to support Maharaj. First he was condemning. Prabhupada does that a lot. First he'll take one side, then he's going to take the other side. Now, first he was condemning. No, this is not good. This Prabhupada says, no, it's not his fault. Paragraph 2. Only a devotee can surpass Maya's great influence. It was no fault on Maharaj Nabi's part that he wanted a son. He wanted a son like the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the best of all sons. So just see, Prabhupada. He's changing here now. Who is going to understand the mind of a pure devotee? By the association of the Lord's devotee, one no longer desires material opulence. This is confirmed, Chaitanya Charitamrita. So now, Prabhupada is saying that this desire is okay, it's spiritual, it's a son like the Lord. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Shastra Kwai, Loma to Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Siddhi Hoi, and Chaitanya Charitamrita. Mahat Kripa Vinakona, Kame Bhakti Noi, Krishna Bhakti Dori Rahu, Sansara Nahikai. If one is serious about escaping Maya's influence and returning home back to Godhead, one must associate with a sadhu, devotee. That is the verdict of all scriptures. By the slight association of a devotee, one can be free from the clutches of Maya. Without the mercy of a pure devotee, one cannot get freedom by any means. Certainly, a pure devotee's association is necessary in order to obtain loving service of the Lord. One cannot be freed from Maya's clutches without sadhu sangha, benediction of a great devotee. Prahlad Maharaj says, Naisam matista varirukkamangrim Sri Satyanata padamo yadata Mahiyasam paranachapisekam Niskinchananam navinitayavat. One cannot become the Lord's pure devotee without taking the dust of a great devotee on his head, paranachapisekam. Pure devotee is niskinchana, no material desire to enjoy a material world. One has to take shelter of such pure devotee to attain his qualities. The pure devotee is always free from the clutches of Maya and her influence. So did anybody learn the verse that you're supposed to learn about Rahugana? Not yet. Okay, we haven't gotten to 12th chapter yet. 5.12.12. Rahuganaitat tapaso nayati. Yeah? Na nirvapanat grihadva. Vina mahatpada dajo bishekam. And that's the end of it, Prabhupada quotes here in the prayer. Pada dajo bishekam. Vina mahatpada dajo bishekam. It's 5.12.12, yes? So these verses, we'll learn this one too from Pallad next year. Naisam matistava. This is also a very nice verse. So, verse 15. By O Lord, you perform many wonderful activities. Our only aim was to acquire a son by performing this great sacrifice. Therefore, our intelligence is not very sharp. We are not experienced in ascertaining life's goal. By inviting you to this negligible sacrifice for some material motive, we have certainly committed a great offense at your lotus feet. Therefore, O Lord of Lords, please excuse our offense because of your causeless mercy and equal mind. Yeah, it sounds to me like they weren't expecting him to come. Saying like that he came personally, oh, what do you want? That was very surprising to them. So this is so now they're appreciating. And Prabhupada is explaining the mentality of a pure devotee. In paragraph 1, the priests were certainly unhappy to have called the Supreme Lord from Vaikuntha for such an insignificant reason. A pure devotee never wants to see the Lord unnecessarily. The Lord is engaged in various activities. The pure devotee does not want to see him whimsically for his own sense gratification. So this is, Krishna is enjoying. Why should we disturb him? He's happy in his Goloka Vrindavan and Vaikuntha. And why should, yeah, he's, why we should call him for our sense gratification? Of course. But this is how the devotee thinks. The pure devotee simply depends on the Lord's mercy. And when the Lord is pleased, he can see him face to face. The Lord is unseen even by demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. By calling on the Supreme Lord, the priests of Nabi Maharaj proved themselves unintelligent. Nonetheless, the Lord came out of his causeless mercy. All of them, therefore, wanted to be excused by the Lord. So then, in the last paragraph, Prabhupada explains the difference between a Sakam devotee and Nishkam devotee. Or Akam devotee, Sakam and Akam. In the last paragraph, initiation into bhakti begins when one is distressed, one of money, inquisitive, to understand. the Absolute Truth. Nonetheless, people who approach the Supreme Lord in this way are not actually devotees. They are accepted as pious, Sukritina, due to their inquiring about Absolute Truth. Not knowing the various activities and engagements of the Lord, such people unnecessarily disturb the Lord for material gain. So this is our new bhaktas, and some of us are still in that stage. However, the Lord is so kind, even though disturbed, He fulfills the desires of such beggars. So those of you who are beggars, or those of us, I should say, who are beggars, the Lord is so kind. Pure devotee is anyabhilashita shunya. He has no motive behind his worship. He is not conducted by the influence of maya in the form of karma or jnana. Pure devotee is always prepared to execute the order of the Lord without personal consideration. The Ritvija, priests of the sacrifice, knew very well the distinction between karma and bhakti. And because they considered themselves under the influence of karma, fruit of activity, they begged the Lord's pardon. They knew the Lord had been invited to come for some paltry reason. So what's the difference between the Sakam devotee and the Akam devotee? What are some differences between them? Yes, Prabhu, in the back. Akam devotee just wants to satisfy the Lord without any reservation. Okay? And Sakam? Yes. He wants to satisfy the Lord with reservation. He wants something. He wants some reciprocation. He wants something back from the Lord. He's expecting something. Whereas the pure devotee doesn't expect. He expects, of course, he expects the causeless mercy. But that may come in any way. It may not come in the way that He may think it will come. So Prabhupada says, there's a very nice purport that we're going to read in 6th canto, 6940. And in that purport, I'll just read one sentence. The difference between Sakam and Akam devotees is that when Sakam devotees, like demigods, fall into difficulty, they approach the Lord for relief, whereas Akam devotees, even in the greatest danger, never disturb the Lord for material benefits. Even if an Akam devotee is suffering, he thinks this is due to his past impious activities and agrees to suffer the consequences. He never disturbs the Lord. So demigods are the example of Sakam. Who is example of Akam? Who is in so much difficulty and he never... Prahlad Maharaj. Vritrasuram. Yes. So Prahlad Maharaj will hear about... He's so much problem, so many impediments, and he never complained or disturbed the Lord. Verse 16, Shukadeva Goswami said, the priests who were even worshipped by King Navi, Emperor Bharatvaksha, offered prayers in prose, generally they were in poetry, and bowed down at the Lord's lotus feet. The Lord of Lords, ruler of demigods, was very pleased with them, and he began to speak as follows. Supreme Personality of Godhead replied, O great sages, I am certainly very pleased with your prayers. You are all truthful. You have prayed for the benediction of a son like me, for King Navi. But this is very difficult to obtain. Since I am the Supreme Person without a second, since no one is equal to me, another personality like me is not possible to find. In any case, because you are qualified Brahmins, your vibrations should not prove untrue. I consider the Brahmins who are well qualified with brahminical qualities to be as good as my own mouth. So I thought a very interesting beginning of the purport. The word avitata girbhi means they whose spoken vibrations cannot be nullified. The Brahmins, dvija, twice born, are given a chance by the Shastric regulations to become almost as powerful as the Supreme Lord. So what does this mean? What are these Shastric regulations that give the Brahmins chance to become powerful? The regulation is, Prabhupada is giving it in the next sentence. Whatever a Brahman speaks cannot be nullified or changed in any circumstance. So whatever a Brahman says, it must happen. This is, according to Vedic injunctions, the Brahman is the mouth. So in all rituals, a Brahman is offered food and the Supreme Lord himself eats. Similarly, whatever a Brahman speaks cannot be changed, it must act. So learned sages who were priests at Maharajnabi's sacrifice were not only Brahmins, but were so qualified, they were like devas, demigods, or God himself. If this were not the case, how could they invite Lord Vishnu to come to the sacrificial arena? So this is truthfulness. So if you're always truthful, this is what happens if you never tell a lie. If you're always truthful, then whatever you say can't be changed. Then you become a Brahmin. And whatever you say, it must act. That's if you are truthful. You are true. This is somewhere in Mahabharata or something like that. It's said like that. Actually, there's all these yam and niyam. So the results of following these rules and regulations of yoga practice. One of the rules and regulations is truthfulness, and by following truthfulness, then this will happen. Verse 18.
Cross reference is 5523.
He glorifies the Brahmins. He gives all the qualities of the Brahman. Yeah, there's eight qualities. Eight different qualities of the Brahman.
This one is 5523.
Oh, 5523.
He glorifies Brahmins at length.
Uh huh. Yeah, I know. He says actually, when you hear 5-5, it's amazing. Eight qualities. Yeah, quite amazing. The glorification of Brahmins in the fifth chapter. He'll list all of the living entities from the lowest to the highest. And who's the highest? First, he goes up through all the demigods, all the lower species and human life, all the different types of human beings. And then he goes, and then finally the highest is the Supreme Lord himself. Then higher than the Lord is the Brahmin, the devotee. He puts the devotee higher than himself. And so that's Rishabhdev's teachings. Okay, we'll read the last few verses here and then we'll have some questions. Verse 18. Since I cannot find anyone equal to me, I shall personally expand myself into a plenary portion and thus advent myself in the womb of Merodevi, wife of Maharajnabi, son of Agnitra. 19. Shukadeva Goswami continued, after saying this, the Lord disappeared. The wife of King Nabi, Queen Merodevi, was sitting by the side of her husband, and consequently she could hear everything the Supreme Lord had spoken. 20. O Vishuddhuta Parikshit Maharaj, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was pleased by the great sages at that sacrifice. Consequently, the Lord decided to personally exhibit the method of executing religious principles as observed by Brahmacharya, Sannyasis, Vanaprasthas, and Grihasthas engaged in rituals, and also satisfy Maharajnabi's desire. Consequently, he appeared as the son of Merodevi in his original spiritual form, which is above the modes of material nature. So here it gives two purposes of his incarnation: to personally exhibit Varnashram Dharma, and also to satisfy Maharajnabi's desire. Two reasons for the appearance of Rishabhdev. And you'll hear, if you read Bhagavatam, different parts of Bhagavatam, then the verses will explain that he appeared to show also the renunciation, the quality of renunciation. At the end of the purport of verse 20, Prabhupada says, as the Supreme Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvadharma Puritaja, Mamekam Sharanam Vraja, the son of Maharajnabi, Rishabhdev, appeared on this earth to preach the principles of religion. That will be explained in the fifth chapter of this fifth canto. So the fifth chapter is very, very important because it will give us what Rishabhdev came to say to us. He came here for a purpose, and the purpose is to preach, and what he'll preach will be in the fifth chapter here. So that's very, very important. That's why we're only going to do five verses tomorrow morning. We'll do five verses, and then in the afternoon we'll do more verses. Because at least four of the five are ones that Prabhupada would quote quite often.
When we do the fifth chapter?
Fifth chapter. That's tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Today, now we're third chapter, this afternoon is fourth chapter, and tomorrow it's fifth chapter. So, yes, we're flying. We're taking the elevator instead of going step by step like last year, the previous years, we're taking the lift. We're taking the lift to the 10th canto. We're taking the lift this year. Okay, now questions and comments. Madhavendra Puri.
A few months ago, I prepared a research on the Rishabhdev, but I'll post it on the wall.
Great.
Is Rishabhdev a real avatar, Vishnu avatar? Is he God? Is he Chaitanya avatar? So please look at
okay.
It. It's very interesting. This personality is many avatars at once.
Yes.
So
Rishabhdev. Yeah, in Mayapur we were discussing what is he? Who is he? And then he found out that he's everything. Leela Avatar, what is that? What else?
Is one of his
Prabhav.
Is
Vaibhav.
Is
Leela Avatar. Manvantar. Manvantar.
Leela Avatar.
Is Shaktyavesh. Bhagyavatavesh. He's everything. If you're looking for an incarnation, you'll find it in Rishabhdev. He's worshipped by the Jains.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Where? Where?
Rishabhdev Hill.
Where is this place?
Near
Mangalore. Mangalore, South India. Yeah, you're from South India. So you've been to this?
Yeah.
It's the place of his disappearance?
They have some eco farm, Bhakti
Vedanta eco farm. Yeah, right.
Farm. It's where his farm is at.
Yeah.
He's on the hill.
Yeah,
where he disappeared or appeared? Or?
He disappeared. There.
Disappeared.
He burnt himself.
He burnt himself
oh.
Out to ashes.
Oh, quite and interesting. So that's where our farm is. Holy place, Adi Purush.
Question,
okay.
So, sometimes Prabhupada condemns praying for material things,
yes.
Sometimes he says that's all right.
Yes.
Listen,
I know some devotees for whom it's like an intense inner conflict.
Yes.
They do have some desires,
yes.
But they are very. They feel very awkward approaching Krishna with his desires.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like painful for them.
Right.
So, what should they do?
He knows some devotees who have material desires, but they're very shy to approach the Lord, or feel very awkward to approach the Lord. So, what is the question? Should we or shouldn't we? Is that it?
How to decide
whether or not we can approach the Lord? I have my answer, but I'd like to hear what other people have. Maharaj?
Says
it clearly, right? Yes. Akama, sarvakama va, mokshikam, udarati.
That's the answer.
That's part of the answer, akama, sarvakama va. But the devotee, you have to understand, so if you're not free from material desires, that makes you, you have desires. So therefore you can approach the Lord. Yes.
There's another one. There's 5, 19, 20.
Oh, yeah.
27.
27, right. Yes. Yes. Yeah. No. No. They approach the Lord for material. They approach for material desires.
Fulfill it, but in such a way that they don't come back with a bigger list.
But they give him. No. He forces them to drink his lotus feet.
He gives
the lotus feet, which makes them forget.
Makes them forget their list.
Yeah. And they throw the list away, just like Dhruva Maharaj. He had his list. Dhruva had his list. He went to the Lord. Then he saw the Lord, and the list went out. And tore up his list.
You know what's amazing? His list went out. Dhruva Maharaj's list went, you know, he threw it over his shoulder in that sense. You know, but the Supreme Lord said, well, you know, it's very difficult for you. Take the pole star. Go ahead.
Yeah,
you know.
He forced him.
And he goes, but anyway, you know, we know that you want to, you know, go ahead, take your father's kingdom for 36,000 years too, you know.
Yeah, and he didn't want it then. Here, take. No. Yeah, so
he
that's...
He even gave him his whole list, you know, without asking for it.
Yeah. Yeah, the point is that it's we have to find out where our level is at and then act from that level. And the Lord will help us. To become It's better to ask the Lord than to go out and get a job and leave Krishna consciousness if you have material desires. So the devotee who doesn't ask the Lord but then falls down and leaves, that's very bad. It's better if you ask and stay. And stay a devotee.
If
he doesn't leave.
But he struggles with himself for 20 years or
something. Oh, then what's the use? Why don't you just accept your position? Obviously, it's better just to confront the Lord. I mean, to somehow or other, actually, seventh canto is a lot more about this, whether in anger or lust or this or that. Just have your relationship with Krishna. Better to directly have a relationship with Krishna. If you're just like this one girl, she just recently, when Guru Kuli, she broke her leg, and she was telling me she was real angry with Krishna. I said, yeah, actually, it's good. You're developing a relationship with Krishna. Otherwise, you may not have noticed he was there before. Anyway.
Also, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur says that the purpose of deity worship is to ask something.
Purpose of deity worship is to ask something.
If you don't ask nothing,
yeah.
Then the purpose is defeated.
Yeah.
So you have to ask something. Preferably spiritual item is that.
Thing is, you sometimes you get in a position where you cannot make progress. So then you have to be humble and pray to the Lord. Yes, Maharaj.
Hey, my experience with that is that it works.
Yes, it works.
I can actually say from a position of a pujari that it works. When you're in a jam and you have no way to go to except your deity,
yeah,
and you call out to him, then they definitely, everything depends on dependency. Whether yes. It's Tulsi Devi, Srimad Bhagavatam, Paramahamsa Sadhusanga or Ganga, like Mahaprabhu said, to Devananda Pandit. The big criteria is dependency. So when a devotee is in distress, that's where the dependency comes out.
Right.
And this is why sometimes Krishna puts the devotees in distress, like Kundalini says.
Right. He puts them in distress, so you'll turn to him.
Yeah, you're forced to turn.
You're forced.
To him. And when you turn to him with dependency, then Krishna says, all right, here, take it. Now, don't forget who gave it to you.
Right. And Kunti, she liked it so much, she said, give me more problems. Then you'll come. I'll see you more. If I, yes, Bhagavad.
When you pray to Krishna for something, and then he receives it, he gives him faith?
Yeah, for a neophyte devotee, he prays to Krishna for something, he gets it, and he, wow, yeah, it works.
And then he
gets purified.
He may increase his devotion.
Yeah, right. And then he stays with the devotional service, and he gets purified. Yes, Prabhu.
I came from discussion with Manuswami.
Manuswami.
Srila Kriya Saradipika is saying that the devotee should not do a sankalpa, means for each word to set what we should achieve. So I was surprised, by it saying that the devotee should not do a sankalpa.
What is sankalpa?
Sankalpa is take a vow.
Take a
vow for some particular breath or form material?
Yeah, for achieving something.
For achieving some mundane purpose.
For mundane purpose, yes. Well, that's understandable. You don't want to take a vow for some mundane purpose.
Like the example was the primary example, it sounds like Hiranyakasipu.
Yes, sankalpa. Also, one devotee was telling me that when you take a vow, it also sometimes the effect is that it hardens your heart a bit. It makes your heart a bit hard when you take a vow and then you restrict yourself, and as opposed to just engaging in devotional service and chanting Hare Krishna, the ordinary course of activities, but do it with devotion.
Yeah, but another thing is that the difference is like, for example, like the Payavrata.
Yeah, Payavrata.
The Payavrata that Diti did was under the direction of her husband. It didn't make her hard-hearted.
Turned her into a Vaishnavi.
Yeah, so that was the end result of the Vrata is purification to achieve Vishnu. Then right. The Vrata is not bad.
Right, so nothing is good or bad, but according to how you...
Right.
What the goal is. What is the goal?
According to what you can do.
Right, okay, that's correct. Thank you, Maharaj. Yes.
So the Prabhupada writes here in the fifth canto, chapter 18.
Chapter 18.
It's a nice comment on that. He said, the idea is, it's not that we should not ask for anything from the Lord, but we should know what to ask for.
Right.
The poet says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives us a very fine purport in this regard. Whenever one offers a prayer to the Supreme Personality of God, one always requests some benediction.
So this is 518?
Nine.
See the purport. Prayer of Prahlad to Nishinga in Jamadweep.
So even pure devotee, Nishkama, Akam devotees, pray for some benedictions as instructed by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. They all ask for benediction. We ask, please pick me up and place me as an atom of dust at your lotus feet.
So one should not ask for foolish things.
Yes.
That's kind of recommended.
That's the point. Right. Okay. What is your name? Oh, is it Tama Krishna? Damana. Okay. Yes, yes. He says the demigods are Sakam devotees.
Should be very careful to purify these desires because they may end up as demigods.
Not may, will. You will end up as demigods. Of course, it's not so bad. Sometimes you get to see Krishna, but you may have a very long life. Yes. And then you may come back here again, and so many things may happen. If you keep your desires. Yes, Panamali.
In Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is asking to Krishna, if you like, you saw this, Vishwarupa. Like, we can ask Krishna, right. Reveal our minds. If you like, you will please pray.
Yeah, that's a very important point, that when you pray, even for anything, material or spiritual, then you should say first, Krishna, if you like, you can give me this. If you like, you can help me. You know, when Prabhupada was very, very sick, in 1974, he gave us a prayer for his well-being. All the devotees in all the temples, Prabhupada instructed us to pray, my dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please cure Srila Prabhupada. And that was the prayer, if you so desire. We couldn't just say, Krishna, please cure Srila Prabhupada. No. Sankirtan.
I'm a bit intrigued by this incident of Navi, in the sense that he's not praying.
No, the priests are doing it. Well, he's a Kshatriya, so he feels like the Brahmins will be more powerful.
But the only way is that the Lord appears because of his devotion.
Right, right.
And in the neck of devotion, it's clearly said that if you engage somebody else to do the worship, or there are 64 items, devotion service, and there are 4 additional ones. And this Varnashram, supportive, one of them, tapasya and knowledge, and the fourth one is to engage other people in doing service in behalf of you. It's not counted as devotional service.
Yeah, well, he wasn't doing devotional service. It's karmakanda.
Yeah,
so there's a way to do it.
He's praying in behalf of him.
Yeah,
he's given the credit that he's praying.
Yeah, well, he's also praying too. He doesn't just sit there.
He must be.
He's doing something.
Well, I have an explanation. It's a case. The Lord causelessly appears anyway.
Well, it did say that
conditions are not really there. It says someone, not that it's causeless mercy that the Lord appears.
Right, right.
Because strictly speaking, it's not devotional service what he does.
No, that's the point. That's the point. It's not devotional service. Right from the beginning.
The prayers, they are nice prayers, devotional prayers.
Right.
But it's actually not him. It's somebody else does it.
Right. But part of the sacrifice, as I understand, and what Prabhupada says is that he was doing something, and it was by his devotion that the Lord appeared. But he also, he did do. Yes.
But my point is, strictly speaking, you have somebody else doing service for you. It doesn't count for you.
Yeah. But it wasn't actually, you're taking the sacrifice as part of devotional service, but it's not, it's karmakanda.
That's another point.
It's not a part of devotional service. And that's the point, that the whole point is that it's not in the devotional path at all,
yes.
This karmakanda sacrifice. It's something else. It's external. It's pravargyesha.
But Navi really does, which is kind of a devotional service.
Yeah, he's praying, he's worshipping. He's doing the worship because part of the sacrifice he has to do His part, well, he's doing his part with devotion.
Yeah, he has an internal mood.
Yeah, and yeah, he's whatever part he's playing in that sacrifice, he's doing it as devotional service.
You're saying he's not praying because he's a kshatriya and they are brahmanas.
No, not like that.
Huh?
Yeah, you know, anyway, yeah.
Yeah, that's the situation.
Yeah, that's the situation.
So the kshatriya is quiet and the brahmanas do their prayers and the Lord appears.
Right.
It's a highly qualified
person. Right. Okay, now somebody was, yes, Bhagwati.
I'm still not clear about the position of Vrindavan because Prabhupada says in the third world, 13 at the end.
13.
Both Vrindavan are trying to become like Vishnu, wanting to sound like God is also a form of sanctuary.
Right.
Purely God can form the creation of the world and service.
Yes. So there's different levels of devotees, and Prabhupada is showing us all the levels. In verse 13, he's saying that this is not the highest level of devotion. But then in verse 14, the next purport, he's saying, this is very nice. So he's saying two different things. So we have to see it according to time, place, and circumstance, and we have to see it according to the level of devotee, what level the devotee is on. For some devotees, it would be a very high level to pray for the Lord to come as your son. But for some devotees, it would be like they're higher than that. So then for them to pray for the Lord as a son, it would not be good. So sometimes Prabhupada's preaching to the highest level, or he's giving us the highest standard, and sometimes he's preaching to lower level devotees. No, but this is very nice. So whatever level you're on, you can find the answer here. But you're confused because he's saying two different things. Yes. Right. Right. Krishna himself, right. And it depends who you worship and who is dear to you, as we learned in Canto 3. Whichever form, some people, they would prefer to see Ram than Krishna. They would prefer to see Nrisimha. And so it's according to your taste and your attraction. Yes, Daman Krishna Prabhu.
Satisfies Supreme Personality Godhead by acting, by going through the priest. So actually, when we worship deities, we go also through the guru. So maybe I was thinking.
That's an interesting point.
Was the same?
Yes, so he's saying, he noticed in the translation one of the items is going through the priest when you perform a sacrifice. Mm-hmm. So when we do our puja, our worship, and we go through our spiritual master. So that is similar. We worship on his behalf. Yeah, that's a good point, I would say. Good point. Good point. So even in the pravargya and also in devotional service, there are similarities. That you go through the priest, you go through the guru to worship the Lord. Welcome, Patri. Adi Purush.
It seems that it's relevant to Baladeva Debhushan's classification of three kinds of devotees, Sanishta, Parinishta, and Nirapeksha.
Oh, yes. Nirapeksha?
Nirapeksha, Parinishta, and Sanishta.
Parinishta and Sanishta. What does that mean? This is Baladeva Debhushan gives three classifications of devotees.
It's based on Vedanta Sutra.
Based on Vedanta Sutra. So what are these three?
Used also in the Bhagavad Gita. So Nirapeksha?
Nirapeksha.
Is a renunciate.
Renunciate.
He doesn't have Paramahamsa.
Paramahamsa.
Doesn't have to follow anything.
Mm-hmm.
Sanishta. Who has a lot of faith and attachment to the Vedic Dharma.
Faith and attachment to Vedic Dharma.
Yeah, so he follows Varnashram, and Varnashram is primary for him.
Okay, Varnashram is primary.
But he does it to please the Lord.
But he does it to please the Lord. So that's how he pleases. Paramahamsa, he doesn't follow any rules. Nirapeksha and Sanishta.
And Parinishta is in between. He does follow Varnashram.
Parinishta.
He does follow Varnashram.
Follows Varnashram.
But it's a secondary consideration to his devotional service.
But it's secondary to his devotional service.
So that's what Bhagavad Gita basically recommends.
Yes, Bhagavad Gita recommends this, Parinishta.
You do follow, but it's secondary.
You follow, but it's not the main thing. It's secondary.
So here it seems to illustrate the sanishtas.
Sanishtas. Those who are Varnashrama is primary. So these are the Brahmins, you are saying. And it seems like Nabi is more in the Parinishta. That it's, okay, he's doing it, but it's not the main thing. Seems like we have two categories here. Although the Brahmins could be beyond it, and they're just being humble. Also, it sounds like they were pretty they're elevated.
They're quite. They have encapsulated the Siddhanta.
Prabhupada says they know the difference between bhakti and karma.
Yeah.
And they feel like they're not devotees. And we are just karmis, and that's... Yeah, they saw the Lord. Something must have happened.
Daksha saw the Lord in the sixth temple, and again, because...
Yeah, I know. Some people take a long time to change. While there's others, yeah. That's really interesting. We learn from all of them, though. We learn from Daksha, we learn from... Because how many of us, we do the same mistake again and again, and we still don't change. And we're chanting and chanting and chanting, and then we make the mistake... And we say, oh yeah, I shouldn't have done that. And we do it again. Okay, we have to. We're also like that. So a lot of these are examples for us to follow. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Sharanya. Okay, her question is that there's two reasons for given here for Rishabhdev to appear. One is to preach and one is to fulfill desire of Maharaj Nabi. So she's questioning the second one. How could it be that he just came to fulfill Maharaj Nabi's desire? Isn't it that he just came to preach? And what was that your question?
Yeah, one of the reasons is he came just to satisfy the desire of Maharaj Nabi, but wouldn't it have been the Lord's arrangement to make...
Wasn't he just coming as Rishabhdev? He didn't need to... I mean, it wasn't like he was coming to fulfill Maharaj Nabi's desire. Was it? Or was it?
He wouldn't want to come unless someone wanted him to come.
She's saying he wouldn't want to come unless someone wanted him to come. Okay, so you're saying it's the via medium for his descent is the devotee's desire?
Yeah. Does he inspire the desire?
Does, so... So she's saying, okay, well, the devotee desired, but didn't the Lord inspire that desire? We're getting pretty complicated here. Let's be simple.
Dvaitacharya also.
Yes, we gave that example, Dvaitacharya. It was his desire that Lord Chaitanya come, and because of his desire, Lord Chaitanya came. Of course, there were many reasons why Lord Chaitanya came. But actually in Bhagavad Gita also, in the purport explaining the Lord's appearance, you know, there's many reasons for the Lord's appearance. Janma karma chame divyam, dharma sang stapan artaya, to establish religious principles, to protect the devotees, to annihilate the demons. But in the purport, Prabhupada gave one most important reason that why the Lord comes. So what's the most important reason? Yes, Mother Indra got it. To mitigate the pain of separation of the devotees. He comes for his devotees. And the other thing is, that's also there, but he comes for his devotees. That's very important. Nishingadev came for Prahlad. Of course, he was supposed to come as Nrisimhadev, but it was because of Prahlad. Yes?
The famous 3911.
3911, famous.
So, yeah,
that we're supposed to learn.
The Prabhupada in the purport mentions that the Supreme Lord, people may be surprised that the Supreme Lord is so pliable.
Right.
For the devotees that are Hari Bhavita, that have got such a transcendental mood. But that is his nature, that he manifests himself in the way that the devotee wants to see him. He's pleased to do that, reciprocate with his devotee.
Yes, he's pleased to come. He's pleased to reciprocate with his devotee.
Like, you know, like the amazing examples, you know, like Gopal Bhatta Goswami's desire to see the Lord in his full form, and he became manifest in his brother Man, or...
Right, Gopal Bhatta had a little shalagram, was it?
Yeah,
Damodar shalagram, and he really wanted. Everybody else had nice dresses for their deities, and he was thinking, I want to dress mine, but I don't have a deity. So next day, he appeared as a deity, and beautiful.
You look between his lips, you can see two teeth.
Two teeth. Very young.
Yeah, and the Padmanabha Goswami also said that where he holds his flute, his fingers, where he curved his fingers, you can see fingerprints.
Oh.
You can see fingerprints on his fingers also.
Wow.
He said that.
Amazing.
No more Diwala can do that.
Fingerprints on Radharaman. So, just see how the Lord comes because of the Lord's of the devotee's desire. That's very important. Very important part of his appearance is the Lord's devotee's desire. There's always some devotee. Some devotee wants him to come, and then he comes. Of course, he comes for his purpose also, but he comes for the devotee's purpose also. That's the main thing. And he comes here just so we have nice things to talk about, Prabhupada said. We have so many things to talk about, and that's how we can get out of this material world, by talking all the time about him and all the things he does in his different incarnations. Otherwise, if he didn't come, what would we talk about?
He also established the religious principles.
Of course, Yuga Dharma and Sat Dharma. Okay, we'll stop here. It's 12 o'clock. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.